Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, welcome. What a weekend. I'm snowed in. I'm dialing in today, but Mr. Eric Wright is there, right? You managed to get up to the studio, even though you only live a little distance from me.
That's true, but thankfully the DOT did a pretty decent job of getting I-5 cleared out this morning, so I was able to make it in without any major incidents, so, except for getting out of my garage, or garage, as you might say. Was very difficult this morning, but I made it, so hooray.
Well, we appreciate you being there, Eric, for us. And
the show must go on, right?
That's correct, and I certainly appreciate you being there for us. So we've got, you had a harrowing journey this morning. I'm sitting very comfortably in my studio down in the South Sound, looking out over the snow. It looks very pretty, but I hope that you listening at home, I hope you are listening at home and not out on the roads, but if you are out on the roads and joining us today, drive safely, stay safe. My two guests today are sharing two very different journeys with us. Coming up around 12:30, we have Michael Guerriero. I'm sure I butchered his name, but we'll find out later. He describes himself as a born explorer and world traveler, and he's joining us to say, yes, our country may be in a black hole, but there's still good reason to celebrate. And let me tell you, he has mastered the art of celebration. But first, we venture on a totally different journey, an emotional journey shared by two best friends. It's a journey that began one evening when Dr. Cynthia Ogden asked her friend to take a picture of her that night, just the way she was right then. Amy Blackburn is my guest. She's a registered nurse and professional photographer living and working in Tucson, Arizona. After spending 15 years in the healthcare industry, she established Amy Blackburn Photography. She used her camera to capture her best friend's journey with breast cancer, a journey she took alongside her. And this culminated in a beautiful photo journal called Caring for Cynthia, A Caregiver's Journey Through Breast Cancer. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being with us, and I hope you can hear me okay because I am dialing in today because of the snow. So if at any point, you know, you can't hear, just shout up. I first of all wanted to congratulate you on this photo journal, this book, because it's a very difficult subject, I think, to write about, and even probably more difficult to photograph, and you've done such a beautiful job of it. What kind of feedback are you receiving from this right now?
Just exactly that. Beautiful, elegant, eloquently stated, and nothing but positive remarks.
Mm. So tell me, let's go back to that night, because this I found so moving. On page, was about page five, there are four pictures there of your best friend. When she asked you, after she asked you, can you take a picture of me tonight just the way I am right now? And I have to tell you, that phrase haunted me for two or three days after I read it. And it really moves me every time I look at it and I look at those pictures. Tell us what happened that night and how this project evolved.
What happened that day, actually, was the day Cynthia received the biopsy report being positive for breast cancer. And after she received that information, she came to my house and made that request that I take the picture of her tonight just the way she is on that particular moment in time. And so I documented who she was that evening. And as she stood in front of the camera and in front of my studio lights, she just began to tear up a bit and then recomposed herself. And I just continued to take pictures through just those few seconds of the tears that began to swell and then her regaining her composure. And I didn't know it at the time, but it really was the beginning of what would come to be a book that I would write about what it was like for me as I would journey with my best friend and her experience with breast cancer, which actually then became my experience with breast cancer just simply because I was a part of the journey.
Right. Now, you're both medical professionals. Cynthia, I think, was a doctor of internal medicine, is a doctor of internal medicine. You're an RN. How did that the diagnosis affect you as medical professionals and then as best friends?
Well, that's the other basis of the book, was simply that despite our hospital careers, we were largely unprepared for a diagnosis of cancer. And we believe that if we were that unprepared, as anyone would be unprepared to receive any kind of diagnosis, such as cancer, if we were that unprepared to go through the journey and what's going to happen, what comes next, what do we need to know, then we couldn't imagine then what the, I'll call them lay people, will go through, those that don't work in hospital environments on a regular basis. And we believe that in our writing the book, in my sharing our journey, those other people could learn and be then better prepared to journey should breast cancer touch their lives.
Mm. On the book jacket, on the inside book jacket, it says that caring for Cynthia acknowledges real conversations about breast cancer and caregiving. And I think that's a key point, because I remember talking a few weeks ago to Reverend Maria Dancing Heart, and she said one of the biggest issues when somebody's diagnosed is beginning the conversation.
That's exactly it. Like, where do you start? Where do you start to have dialogue with your friends, one's friends, one's loved ones, and even with physicians and those healthcare providers that will be caring for the person who's been diagnosed? And caring for Cynthia just offers a platform from which to begin the conversation, just to view what we went through in our journey, and then take snippets of what we went through and just ask questions. Well, will this happen? Well, if this doesn't happen, can this happen? Can that happen? And begin the conversation that way.
Now, the text, you say, is all about you sharing yourself. You obviously were on your own journey alongside your friend.
Right.
The images are all Cynthia sharing herself. How difficult was it for both of you to go through that process?
The process of being photographed?
Or the process, well, for Cynthia, for sharing, because there are some very graphic images in there, and mm-hmm. You've done them as tastefully as you possibly could.
Right.
How difficult for Cynthia was this to share that?
You know, I can't say how difficult it was for her. I do know that the photography and our giving a purpose to the journey gave us some control as to how we would face breast cancer. Instead of becoming what we believed would be victims or some suffering we would have around the diagnosis, we took control of what we could, managed it the way we wanted to manage it, and brought the camera with us to document it. And in a way, the camera allowed us to escape some of the real deep emotional depth that one goes with the diagnosis.
Is that because you could detach yourself a little? I remember reading that, and you said that even though you were both medical professionals, there was still a lot of denial about the diagnosis, but the photography helped you deal with the reality and yet at the same time escape it.
That's exactly what it did. It really did. On days where we should be really concerned about what the physician's going to say to us or what the physician's going to say to Cynthia and then, you know, our reaction to it, we would just go into the doctor's office with the camera and make sure we took good pictures or, you know, make sure we were going to get good pictures to document the day. Cynthia was very clear from the beginning of her diagnosis that if she was going to go through this, she wanted others to be able to learn from it.
Yeah.
And I assert that there's been a lot of books written from the patient viewpoint of what the patients go through, and I believe there's just been very limited, there's just not been a loud enough voice from the caregivers and what the caregivers and those who are around the patient, what they go through when the diagnosis is made.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about what you did go through, because you were, you know, best friends. It's a very traumatic diagnosis, and
right.
The statistics are quite horrifying. We all know the statistics on breast cancer. How did you feel as her best friend?
Right. First and foremost, I was helpless and speechless. Didn't know what to say and didn't know what to do. And it's a real common thing that caregivers have. We often don't know what to say. We often wonder if we're going to say the right things. Then we're faced with just not saying anything at all. And so first, fear foremost, and then helplessness and a lot of uncertainty. And just a lot of taking each day as it comes and each week as it comes. And learning to simply appreciate the little things that happen in life.
Yes, I remember you you said that at one point, I think it was actually after Cynthia had had her surgery, and you were standing in the shower one day, and you suddenly realized, well, gosh, what would it be like to shower without hair? And you suddenly realized just how short life was and that there were things you had left unsaid.
Right.
I hope you said those things now.
Right. You know, we shouldn't go through life waiting for a circumstance like cancer to plummet us into that which we should say. We should just take it on. In our everyday lives with those beautiful people that we keep around us, our friends and our colleagues and our family, who they are for us, and be a lot more open about sharing ourselves with these dear people that we have in our lives.
Yes, definitely. It's you just never know, and waiting until tomorrow doesn't do the job sometimes. Let's take a break.
Sure.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Amy Blackburn. Her book is called Caring for Cynthia, A Caregiver's Journey Through Breast Cancer. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Are you faced with financial fear every month? Is debt running your life? Are you stressed over the Wall Street meltdown? If you're ready to create a life of financial freedom, attend a MoneyWise Women Conference, a safe place to learn about money. The all-day conference features 3 keynote speakers and 12 breakout sessions taught by local professional experts. The next MoneyWise Women Conference is on Saturday, January 10th at North Seattle Community College. For more information, visit www.moneywisewomen.net or call 360-204-0982.
As another year comes to a close, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair revisits Live Your Dream with Joyce Chapman. Joyce is a dream activist whose work has helped hundreds of people successfully change their lives, including Vicki. If you've been putting off your dream, don't waste one more moment. Tune in next Monday at noon for Live Your Dreams on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Listen live at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. If you're just joining us, I'm dialing in from my studio down at the south end of the Tacoma Narrows today because I'm snowed in on my street, and our wonderful Eric Ryder did manage to trek up there. He doesn't live too far from me, but he managed to trek up to the studio to get us live on the air today. And appreciate that, Eric, because we have two great guests. My guest I'm talking to right now is Amy Blackburn. She's a registered nurse and photographer, and we're talking about her book, Caring for Cynthia, A Caregiver's Journey Through Breast Cancer. And as I said at the top of the hour, this is a really beautiful book. And it's hard to create beauty out of such a difficult topic, but it's been done so tastefully and so honestly. I think that's what really makes this book work so well. I wanted to talk a little bit about community, Amy, because you have talked about community in the book a lot and the importance of this to your friend's, Cynthia's, recovery. So what do we need to know as people who might run into the same situation? What do we need to know about community and support?
Well, I believe a great part about Cynthia's journey is that she chose to tell others about her diagnosis, and in doing so allowed then all the more people to know that she would need help, or that she would need help in bringing some balance in her life. And I do understand that one person, a lover or a partner or a significant other in the patient's life cannot meet all the needs that the patient will have. And so I believe it takes a community to support the well-being of the men and women being diagnosed. So thankfully, in Cynthia telling all of whom she told, that all was help then for me, lended me support in caring for her. So if I wasn't available to take her to the grocery store or to take her to a cancer appointment or to be with her during her chemo administration, she had others that would be available for her. So she had friends from actually people that she didn't know that became aware mm-hmm. of her circumstances that lent help to people at church, people in her professional community at the hospital, and close friends and family.
From your experiences as a medical professional, do you think that most people, most patients receive adequate caregiving?
Well, it's not a question that can be answered with one word. There are certainly there are sometimes lapses in care, and there are some breaks in care that aren't always due to the caregiver. Some of it's due to things that come up on the patient's end. There's always a factor of compliance and a breakdown in perhaps follow-up plans that the hospital put into effect. So there's not one thing to point to that is the breakdown in healthcare and whether or not people are receiving adequate care. Because in a lot of circumstances, they are receiving adequate care. And then there are some times when adequate care isn't.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You say in the book, as I walked to my car, I realized I had less than a month to prepare for the event that would change my best friend's life. I was blind to the fact that cancer would change my life too. How did your life change with this journey?
Well, it changed in all that I was able to experience with Cynthia. And just to take something that could be so devastating as cancer and to turn it into something that can be beautiful and that others can learn from, and the journey that began for me as being a published author and going further with my photography and going further into who I am as a nurse in regards to caregiving. And all that I've been able to learn about it.
Yeah.
Well,
and what did you learn about yourself, Amy?
That's a great question. Well, what I learned retrospectively, as I admit to in the book, is a caregiver does not have to be the end-all, catch-all, be-all for the patient. The caregiver really can just be someone who's available for the patient to talk to and available to do the listening. And just simply to be present in and of itself is sometimes enough for the patients. Like for Cynthia, just not to be alone, and for just me to be simply in her house with her was sometimes just enough. Even if we weren't exchanging words, just simply my presence was enough.
Right. You say that you placed a burden on yourself, the burden of pressure to have all the answers. You felt that you should have all the answers for Cynthia. How did you come to that realization that, no, you don't have to have all the answers?
Right. We really don't have to have the answers. We just have to be almost like a sounding board. And there's a lot of times when patients just need to talk. They just need to air their thoughts or air their complaints. And we just happen to be the people that they're airing them to. And just because they're saying what they're saying doesn't mean I have to give For instance, if Cynthia were to say that something was happening for her, it didn't mean that I had to give her an answer as to why it was happening. All I really had to be was just a sounding board and just the space for her to speak. Give her essentially the freedom to be who she was at the time.
Absolutely, that's so important. You know, she had beautiful long hair, didn't she? Beautiful blonde long hair, and she did have that cut off, and she donated it to Locks of Love. But you say the loss of her hair hit you harder than you'd anticipated. How so?
Well, I just thought when it was going to occur, I just thought, okay, this is just something we have to deal with. She's going to lose her hair. But then when she really did lose her hair, it was quite emotional. It was quite emotional. And then soon after she lost it, it didn't take me long to understand that even without her hair, she was still Cynthia. It was just my physical way of how I identify with her, just the physical look of her body. And, you know, all I really needed to do was look in her eyes, and I could see that it was still the same Cynthia that I've always known.
Yeah.
And it was something like that that I wouldn't have imagined was going to hit me as hard as it did. And then it did.
And yeah, it's kind of the reality stamp, isn't it?
Right. And then one has to just kind of filter through it and deal with it and manage those emotions that come every step of the way through the journey.
Mm. She opted not to have reconstructive surgery. What was the reasoning behind that?
Well, a lot of what we did the day of the consult of the breast reconstruction was just to gain as much knowledge as we could about the process. It was both, again, something neither of us knew anything about. And once we learned what we did, she understood it was not additional surgeries that she wanted to undergo. She just understood it just wasn't something she wanted to do right now at that time. She hasn't excluded it as something she could do in the future, but at that time, she didn't feel that she wanted to do it.
Right.
There's actually a lot to know about breast reconstruction, so much so that there's people developing entire books about it. There's so much to know.
Oh, right. It's not quite as simple as we think, is it?
It sure isn't, no.
And I know looking at some of these images, I'm very squeamish, so I was kind of looking through one eye at some of them, even though you've very tastefully done them. But it's a big thing. It is a big thing to make a decision about.
It is. And some of the images are squeamish, and that's specifically why I wanted to include them in the book, because I believe that once someone's life has been touched with breast cancer, if they're to see it first through my book and then experience it in their lives, they're all that much better prepared for it when it hits their life.
Yeah, and I don't know anybody who's actually had breast cancer, touch wood, but if I was going through the similar kind of journey that you guys went through, I would want to look at this. I definitely would. I think I keep hearing a beeping in my ear. I hope that's not coming out over the air, but I wanted to ask you about frustration, because I know there must have been some frustration. So how did you deal with frustration yourself?
Caregivers have to understand how important it is for them to take care of themselves. And first and foremost, I needed to rest, nourish myself, drink water, and keep an adequate level of exercise. So I would do whatever I needed to do. So if it were to walk or to go to yoga, or maybe I also swim, so sometimes I would swim. There were some friends I could rely on where I could, so to speak, complain to my friends and sort of air out my thoughts and feelings with some friends and my family members as they knew I was journeying with Cynthia. And so I would turn to them. So exercise, proper nutrition, and hydration, as well as friends and support.
Okay, sounds good. Well, we are at the end of our show. I appreciate you being with us today and sharing this beautiful photo journal book with us. What would you like to leave our listeners with today, Amy?
I encourage anyone to engage in a journey with someone who's been diagnosed so they can go further within themselves to learn that which they would never expect to have learned, and it will all be a positive experience. And the book is available on the website, caringforcynthia.com.
Okay, it's caringforcynthia.com. And you can learn more about Amy as well at amyblackburnphotography.com. Thank you for being with us, Amy.
Thank you, Vicki.
And please stay with us. We will be right back. We're going to actually play, if Eric's got this lined up, a book talk. We're going to play you last week's book talk podcast. Every week we put a book talk podcast up there, a book review. Our regular contributor, Cynthia Baxter, is a voracious reader, and she reads, writes, and then reads the reviews on the podcast. And so we have that coming up next, and Eric's going to tell me when that's ready.
It's ready right now, so we're going to go ahead and play that right now.
All right, we'll be back with you shortly. Please stay tuned.
Welcome to Book Talk, brought to you in part by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Hi, my name is Cynthia Baxter, and today I want to talk about Ian Banks' masterful tale, The Crow Road. This book was published in the UK 16 years ago, but never in the US until this year. I would call this a family saga, but the official genre for it is Bildungs Roman, meaning a novel of formation, or more simply, coming of age for the main character or protagonist. That person is Prentice McGowan. And you spend a year with him, his family, and friends with many digressions to the past. Not just his past, but that of his kin as well. The primary focus is on the three families, the McGowans, the Irvilles, and the Watts. These families have played together, married each other, and died alongside each other for generations in the small towns of Scotland. So it shouldn't be too surprising that the storyline jumps around a lot. You could be hanging out with Prentice and Ashley Watt in a pub during modern times and then suddenly back 30 years peeking through a keyhole with a teenage Rory McGowan, Prentice's uncle. Don't worry, though. It all works out and you spend a considerable time with these families in this 501-page novel. Every bit of it is a wonderful treat. The language, the depth of characters. You'll find yourself yearning for Scotland and reading even with a bit of a brogue. So what is the book about? The words Crow Road come from the saying, Away the Crow Road, which refers to the dying process. And it's true that in the story, there are more funerals than marriages or births. It's, well, about life and death and treachery and betrayal and love and death and imperialism and colonialism and capitalism. It would be about Scotland or India and the working class and exploitation and action. And there would be characters in the work who would represent all of these things. And the working out of the story would itself prove the subjectivity of truth. Now, that's not me. That's Ian Banks, and it's on page 173 in reference to Uncle Rory's box of notes for his own book called The Crow Road. I thought it worked rather well in describing this Crow Road. I kept that list with me, and sure enough, each of those things play into the story. And such a splendid story. Aside from the family history, there's a mystery to unravel, lots of skeletons in closets, and even a missing person. Banks tells the story by not telling it. Instead, he goes around it, reflects back on it, but never really looks at it straight on. I read an interview with the author, and they talked about how this book was, quote, evangelical atheist book and all about religion, quote. I just don't see it. Perhaps in reference to the rift between Prentice and his father, Kenneth, which had its basis in religious difference, but I really think that it had more to do with two strong-willed men who can't even agree to disagree. But who knows? I love the book even if I didn't see it the same as others. We all bring our own perceptions and life experience with us when we read, and we take with us our own individual lessons found within the pages. So pick up Ian Banks' The Crow Road, spend some time with these eccentric families, and appreciate the dips and curves of a truly epic saga. Enjoy the book.
Thanks for listening to Book Talk. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair every Monday at noon on KKNW AM 1150. See our guest schedule at conversationslive.net.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, those podcasts go up every Wednesday night. If you sign up for an RSS feed, you can have them download to any MP3 player of your choice. They'll be in your box on Thursday morning. My next guest is Michael Garrett. Oh, I've already forgotten. Michael, tell me how you say his name.
You could just say G, Mike G.
No, we want to get your full name out. Come on, it's Guerrero, right?
It's Guerrero.
Guerrero. I'm sorry. We got, it's just one of those days, you know, because I got snowed in this morning, so I'm having to phone in myself.
Vicky, and, 99% of people can't pronounce that name, so don't feel bad.
Michael Guerrero. Okay. All right, I'm going to give you an intro, so hold on. Michael describes himself as a born explorer and has spent years immersing himself in different cultures, talking with colorful characters, and participating in regional festivities around the world. And you're joining us today, Michael, to say, yes, it may look as though our country's in a black hole, but there's still good reason to celebrate. Let's get out and have some fun, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and I should say, also that you are the author of Party Across America, 101 of the greatest festivals, sporting events, and celebrations in the U.S. So tell us what you're up to, doing.
You know, Party Across America is the only, and you know, I had this idea to write this book for quite some time, and came to find out that there are no guidebooks that basically tell people where the greatest celebrations in the U.S. are and how to go to them. So Party Across America is something I've been working on for a while, and it's a guidebook to the 101 greatest annual parties in the U.S. It's just been out for about 2 weeks. And, you know, yeah, the timing is interesting because all we hear is doom and gloom and kind of bad news everywhere we turn, but big picture really is that life is short. Life should be celebrated as often as possible. There's really no country out there that celebrates like the United States does. And no matter how bad things get, we still have it better than 99% of the world. And, you know, this is it. Basically, we're kind of in a time where a lot of people are in a funk, and there's really been no other time that we deserve to party like right now.
I think we forget that. I think, you know, you're right. The media is blasting us with everything negative. We very rarely hear good news about anything. And sometimes we've got to take that into our own hands. But I want to look at how you got here, because you said, tongue-in-cheek, that this book was 10 years in the making. You were researching for 10 years. You lived kind of a gypsy lifestyle. You traveled all over the place. What changed?
Well, it's interesting. What happened was, you know, back in my mid-20s when I was ski bumming in Tahoe, California, we would take road trips back from the East Coast to the West Coast in between the ski season, and we would stop at festivals and events that we'd always wanted to go to. So a lot of the big ones that everybody knows, like the Kentucky Derby and Mardi Gras or the Indy 500 or some of those big ones, but then a lot of smaller ones that only people who really live in a certain area may know about. And what happened was I got laid off from a job about a year and a half ago and took the severance package to basically complete the research for this book that I've always wanted to write. And it kind of all came together. It was almost like divine intervention. I landed a book deal, and next thing I know, I'm writing a guidebook to the greatest parties in America. And it's just been a blast, nothing short of a blast.
Yeah, well, that was very serendipitous, wasn't it? But the key thing is that, okay, you got the severance package, but you put it to the best advantage. You love traveling, and so that's what you put that money to.
Yeah, you know, maybe your financial advisor wouldn't have said it was the best move. But, you know, it was a dream, and that's kind of the, you know, like I said before, that the point of the book is that life is short, and we live in a place that offers just awesome, ample opportunities to go out there and blow off steam and celebrate your life. And this stuff happens in our own backyard. And I wouldn't have been taking my own advice if I would have, you know, socked it away or tried to get another job right away. I wanted to write this book.
Yeah. So tell us how you got this book. You had no writing experience. I read that you walked into, who was it, the media, I can't remember the name of your publisher right now, but you walked into the publishers in a T-shirt, jeans, and flip-flops, you know, hardly a likely candidate. What did you say to them to convince them that this book was what needed to be published?
That's a great question, Vicky. It was pretty funny. And the short answer is that what really happened was I realized that nobody had written a book like this. And I went into those guys and somehow got a meeting set up with all these kind of, you know, hoity-toity guys that worked for the publishing house and some executives. And I said, listen, there are books out there about, you know, best dog-friendly hotels and, you know, the greatest day spas in the U.S. and best national parks and monuments. I said, we need a guidebook, not only that lists the greatest celebrations in the U.S., but tells people, you know, if they're going to go to the world's largest disco in Buffalo, New York, it tells them when it is, where to stay, what the hotels cost, when to buy tickets, how much the tickets cost, all the best websites to do this on the cheap, what to expect when you get there, you know, how to avoid lines, just something that tells people every bit of information they need to go party across America. And they bit and they agreed and they said, you know what, you've got 8 months to give us the manuscript, go get them. And that's what we did.
So what did you do? Jump in your car and take off? Tell us what your plan was.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was good timing with getting laid off from that job. And I was able to take one kind of last huge road trip that took over, you know, 3.5 months of going to a lot of the summertime events. I had already been to a lot of the wintertime ones. And, you know, I think there was about 18 or so festivals and parties we hit on that last road trip that kind of wrapped up the research.
So do you have a favorite place, a favorite festival, favorite party?
Oh, God, you know, it's such a tough question because the book ranges from motorcycle rallies to music festivals to football tailgates to sporting events to Halloween celebrations, St. Paddy's Day, other holidays. I mean, it's just a huge range. But I've got to say that if I had to be asked what my favorite was, it would be the Gasparilla Pirate Festival in Tampa, Florida.
Which and is, that is where?
Yeah, it's just a wild time. It's a, you know, it's basically an excuse for 500,000 people in Tampa to take off work. And the largest moving parade in the world starts at Tampa Bay, and there's lots of puffy shirts and swords and pirates involved. And it ends up in downtown Tampa after a, you know, a 4 or 5 mile parade, and all night in downtown Tampa is just merriment, and it's just a great event.
You had a lot of events in there that I've never heard of. There was one in I definitely don't want to go to this one, but it was the Testicle Festival. Tell us a little bit about that.
Vicky, you I think you've chosen wisely there. No, no, the name is kind of separate from the party, I promise. But the Testicle Festival happens in a little kind of, I wouldn't say too little, but a biker bar in Missoula, Montana. And each summer, you know, thousands of bikers and real cowboys come in there, and they just throw this wild shindig called the Testicle Festival. And there's live music all weekend, lots of blues and rock and roll, and they consume thousands of pounds of battered and fried Rocky Mountain oysters, otherwise known as bull testicles. And that's kind of where the festival gets its name.
Interesting. See, there's a party for everything if you just look up. So I read that you traveled across the country. You had 8 driving trips across the country?
Yeah.
Was that just for the book, or had you done that before?
Well, like I said, that last multi-month one was specifically for the book. But, you know, before then, it was these, when we were ski bumming and driving from coast to coast and kind of taking these zigzagging trips, you know, to go to we probably went to over 50 or 60 through 7 road trips across the country, plus that last final one there. And, you know, it's a lot of miles logged, and it was a lot more work maybe than it sounds like, but I tell you, it was just a great experience, and I'm so happy to have written a book that turned out the way it did. I mean, it really is the roadmap and kind of the ultimate party hopper's Bible. But it's, you know, I don't want to come across like it's just a beer drinking thing, because it's basically saying, you know, although that does happen and the people get a little bit wild, this is just a way to exist in the present. And when you're at the Mermaid Parade or the Talladega 500 or the Gilroy Garlic Festival, nobody is worried about the economy. Nobody's talking about politics. Nobody's planning for anything. Everybody is just existing in the present. And I think that's something we could probably all do a little bit more of.
Oh, I agree. I think it's, you know, kids live always in the present, really, don't they, when they're playing? And that's what I think going to these kind of festivals allows you the opportunity to do, and to learn more about your fellow countrymen and, you know, regional cultural things.
Absolutely.
Also, you know, I mean, it's true that we have very little vacation time compared with many other countries. And even when we have vacation time, Americans often don't take it. I remember seeing statistics once that I saw only 60% of Americans use all of their vacation. And our allocated vacation time is often about half of what it is in Europe. I think Australia gets about 6 weeks a year. 5 or 6 weeks a year is pretty average.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get 2 weeks a year, and many people don't even take that full 2 weeks. So it's a good reason. I saw the book was compared to 1001 Places to See Before You Die, but you don't agree with that.
Tell us
how it differs.
Yeah, there's been a number of kind of reviews saying that, oh, the fun version or the party version of 1000 Places to See Before You Die. And, I mean, it's very flattering to be compared with such a successful book. And, of course, I'm not knocking 1001 Places to See Before You Die, but that book, for the most part, just lists, you know, these amazing places and says, here they are. And the big difference between that and Party Across America is that Party Across America says, okay, here are the events, but also here's every single ounce of information that you need to plan a successful trip to any of these places. So if you turn to the chapter on the Kentucky Derby, it's going to tell you, you know, how to avoid lines at the Derby, where to stay, how much hotels cost, all the local public transportation, how to bet on a horse. I mean, it's just a little bit more all-inclusive, I think.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Michael Guerrero. His book is called Party Across America, 101 of the Greatest Festivals, Sporting Events, and Celebrations in the U.S. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please stay with us.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Looking for new fiction authors? For a different kind of book? For good writing that challenges the mind, the heart, the spirit? Then check out Book Talk Podcasting at 1150kknw.com. Book Talk brings you weekly bite-sized book reviews brought to you by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. You can listen to Book Talk Podcasts at 1150kknw.com or anytime by downloading them to your MP3 player. If you'd like to try your hand at submitting a review, email info@conversationslive.net for more information. To listen to Book Talk, go to 1150kknw.com and click on podcasting. It's that simple. As another year comes to a close, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair revisits Live Your Dream with Joyce Chapman. Joyce is a dream activist whose work has helped hundreds of people successfully change their lives, including Vicki. If you've been putting off your dream, don't waste one more moment. Tune in next Monday at noon for Live Your Dreams on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
You know you got to have hope. You know you got to be strong. Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Radio with no added hormones or preservatives. All natural. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest in the second half is Michael Guerrero. He's the author of Party Across America. We're hearing so much gloom and doom on the news media, and many of us are snowed in or stranded right now at airports because of the snow up here. So it's time we had a little fun. I wanted to ask you, Michael, what... when you were choosing which events went into this book, because you've got 101 of these events across the country, what kind of criteria were you looking for?
So there were two rules that I kind of gave myself. First rule is that it has to happen in the same place every year. So it's got to be an annual event that does not switch locations. And the second rule was that the energy level just had to be through the roof. It had to be a party or a festival or a sporting event that the whole town or city that really it takes place in rallied around and looks forward to all year long.
And there's not much in Washington, I have to say. I was giving you a hard time in the break. There's not a lot going on in Washington State. Is that because you ran out of time, or do we just not have that much going on compared with the rest of the country?
Well, all right, so I knew...
Come on.
Vicky, I knew you were going to ask me that question. And so, I mean, there is definitely what I hope is a good answer. So the deal with the book is that, you know, when you're trying to get 101 parties out, I think California's got 6, Texas has 5, most states have 1 or 2, and there's a few states like, North Dakota that doesn't have any, but most states have at least one. Washington's only party in the book is the Kennewick Annual Hydroplane Races that happen down in the southern part of the state on the Columbia River. It's one of the more wild. I didn't know a hydroplane race could be so crazy until I went to it. Now, that being said, I know that Seattle's got some great stuff going on, and there was so many that were just on the cusp of making it in the book. New Year's Eve in Seattle, I know, is a fairly big deal, although that wasn't as close as, like, the Bumber Shoot and the Seafair in Seattle. And
right.
I know that those are awesome celebrations, and I know that those are great, but, yeah, you know, they just didn't quite make the cut, especially Bumber Shoot because, you know, that's an alternative music festival. And Bonnaroo, Coachella, and Austin City Limits are in the book, and I was kind of drawing the line at 3 alternative music festivals, and those are kind
okay,
of...
Okay, so we need to rev it up a little, is what you're saying.
I can't even tell you how close it was but it just kind of was not on the echelon and this is only in my opinion. I mean, geez, this is only my opinion, but I promise you this. In the second edition of this book, which they already want, Seattle will make a much stronger showing, I promise, because I don't think I realized how much fun the log boom party after the Seafair on that last weekend was at the time. And so that's one that probably deserves to be in there somewhere. So.
Right, and you threw down a challenge. You threw down a challenge to people to, if they're aware of a festival that they think should make it in the book, to get in touch with you.
Yeah, you know, the website for the book is partyacrossamericabook.com. And so I would say that, listen, if you're sitting there listening to this and you know of something in Washington that you feel like really should be in there, send me an email and, you know, rip my head off about it if you want. Tell me I'm an idiot for not putting it in. That's the point of this book, is to just kind of have a new edition and a new edition and just expose these great celebrations that happen everywhere. So,
yeah. So how have your travels, you've traveled all over the world, you've traveled across America many times. How have your travels changed you as a person? How have you evolved as a person directly through the experiences you've had?
Well, yeah, I mean, just beyond the celebrating and the festivals in the U.S., I mean, it's just, when you go anywhere and you see how the rest of the world lives and you come back home, I think anybody who's traveled realizes how you know, not only great we have it, but how kind of meaningless a lot of the little things we worry about are. My wife and I, we got engaged on the top of Mount Kilimanjaro, which is something that we'll always remember and are very, very proud of doing. But
Did you get down on one knee to propose?
I did. I did.
That's very romantic.
I'm kind of a big softy. Yeah, and it was romantic, but at the same time, we were at 19,000 feet, and we could hardly even, you know, breathe. So
that's why you were on your knee, really. Come on, Fessa.
Yeah.
You were taking a breather.
And she had no choice but to say yes, because it was a long way down after that. But, I mean, you know, basically, we really do live in a special place, and the rest of the world just struggles to get by on a day-to-day basis in many cases, and we're just so fortunate to live in the country we live in.
Yeah, I want to ask you as well what you want to say about pursuing your dream, because you talk on, I have a sheet about your story, and we kind of touched on this, because you were laid off, you took your layoff, your severance package to take advantage of this. And you say, when a door closes, a window may open. And so many people bottle those dreams up inside of them. Actually, next week, we're revisiting a show called Live Your Dream with dream activist Joyce Chapman. I thought it was kind of appropriate since it's the end of the year. What do you want to say to people about pursuing their dreams?
Well, you know, I would just say that everybody has a party across America inside them, and everybody has an idea that they've really thought about acting on, and maybe they kind of never get the time or they get too busy. And, God, you know, whether it's starting a business or whether it's maxing out your credit cards and taking a trip around the world for a year, I mean, whatever it is, you know, there really is no time like now. And we spend so much time planning for the future, and you know, while that's all wonderful and all, you know, the last thing you want to do is be an old person and look back and have regrets. And so, you know, that was the, when I was talking about writing this book, I said to my wife, you know, I've had this idea for so long, I think it's time I act on it. And she says, well, you're going to always regret it if you don't do it. And she said, I think this is really going to work out for you. And I kind of had more doubts than she did. But it is just a matter of putting your thoughts into action. And here's a guy who had never, God, I never even wrote for the high school newspaper. And here I am, I just get a book deal. I write a book that's, in the first 3 weeks it's been out, has been doing extremely well. And that's not to toot my own horn. It's just to say, listen, when you go for it, anything's possible.
Yeah, sometimes I think, were you a little bit naive about the publishing process? Because I'm just asking you that because I think sometimes when people like delve into, okay, what's it going to take to do this, they can often get intimidated. I think sometimes naivete can work in your favor.
You're right. I think if I had any idea how difficult it is to get published and you know, just of how complicated the whole process is, I may have been too intimidated to try it. Being naive was actually probably a helpful thing. You're right.
But it didn't stop you putting together a great book, and you've been a great guest and a cheerful guest, and that's what we needed today on this snowy Seattle day. I appreciate you being with us today, Michael.
Well, thank you, Vicki. Thanks for having me, and Merry Christmas to you.
And Merry Christmas to you, too. And my guest is Michael Guerrero. His book is called Party Across America, 101 of the Greatest Festivals, Sporting Events, and Celebrations in the U.S. And you can find his website at partyacrossamericabook.com, partyacrossamericabook.com. And he also has a blog that shoots off that. And I want to thank each of you for joining us today. I want to thank Eric Ryder for getting us live on the air today. Eric, you are a trooper.
My pleasure.
Yeah, we appreciate it very much. And I just want to wish you all happy holidays. If you celebrate, have a wonderful time. If you don't celebrate, enjoy your time off and make the most of being snowed in. I'm going to. And we'll be back with you next week. We'll be airing a show we did with Joyce Chapman called Live Your Dream. And until then, live well, live strong. See you next year.
As another year comes to a close, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair revisits Live Your Dream with Joyce Chapman. Joyce is a dream activist whose work has helped hundreds of people successfully change their lives, including Vicki. If you've been putting off your dream, don't waste one more moment. Tune in next Monday at noon for Live Your Dreams on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.